seed usage, cicadas, drought, and more. It's Ramblin' Time. Welcome to the Arkansas Organic Chronicles podcast, where we discuss anything, everything, and all things related to certified organic food here in Arkansas. I'm Joe Hannon, production instructor at Calf Farm School. It's that time for our monthly ramblings. On the docket for today is using holdover seed in the springtime, cicadas, and drought, and various other things. So, Riley was on the show last week, and we recorded more than what we ended up using for that episode. So, I have a couple additional segments that I'm going to tie in from that recording that we'll add to the end of the episode this week. So, just so you know, it's just me to get started, and then we'll pull in a little bit of some extra recordings that I had from Riley. Around the state, Extension has been trapping, monitoring for several key insect pests. As we go through the season, I'd like to try to keep you updated on what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. And of course, you can always check the weekly reports from around the state online as well, and I'll drop a link in the show notes. What are we seeing as of April 24th, April 25th? Well, we're seeing some early numbers for cabbage moth, but they're fairly low, especially considering last year. About 20 at calf last week, a few more this week. Haven't seen numbers from around the whole state yet, but overall they've been fairly low as we're going into the 1st of May here. Squash vine borer, we're not seeing much yet, but we are right at about growing degree days for emergence through central and southern Arkansas, so be on the lookout for adults flying. Again, you can check the weekly reports from around the state link to see what's going on and what's flying around your area and what we're seeing in the traps there. Do remember, though, it's not the adults that we are worried about. It is the subsequent egg hatch with the squash vine borer that we are worried about. So those eggs will hatch a couple weeks after they're laid, and then they emerge from the eggs and burrow into the stems of your squash and pumpkin plants. So really that timing for any sort of control is right now if you want to put on an insect barrier to keep them from getting into the plants, or looking at some sort of BT Dipel type product at egg hatch. A little bit harder to time egg hatch, so you need to get out there and scout for your adults and then assume a couple weeks later and be looking for egg masses right around down in that central crown area of the plant. Finally, we have a little bit of corn earworm showing up this year. So early numbers, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head right now, but it looks like we're a little bit ahead of where we were for total numbers in the field here, at least at calf when I was talking to Colin the other day. So we are seeing a little bit more tomato fruit worm, corn earworm than we have in this time last year. Definitely something to be watching out for, but again, we don't have a whole lot of crops really susceptible to this generation right at the moment. Have not seen or heard anything from spotted winged Drosophila, but again, we're pretty much in bloom for blueberries and blackberries, so not a whole lot to worry about there. And yes, they can get in strawberries, but they tend not to be the biggest issue in strawberries as opposed to brambles. As I'm recording this today, it is raining. I've got a quarter inch of rain at my house today, but overall, we've been pretty droughty the last couple of weeks, at least up here in northwest Arkansas. I was out looking at our peas and rye that we have planted for Rilla Crimped cover crop, and the last week, early this week, the rye has really, really looked gray and really looked stressed. You know, when we're planting rye, especially mixed with some peas like that, we'd expect that to be, you know, almost shoulder height on me. And I'm not that tall, but almost shoulder height. And I'm walking out there and it is definitely significantly less than that. It's probably 6-8 inches shorter than where you would like to see it. So as we're looking at roller crimping here in the next 7 to 10 days, I'm a little bit concerned about how much biomass do we actually have out in that field and if it's going to end up being a good season-long ground cover for weed management, knowing that we don't have as much biomass out there in order to really provide a good, thick, long mat. So we will have to, like so many other people, make a decision on what are you going to do after roller crimping. Is it enough to get you by throughout an entire season or not? So looking at it, if it is a little bit thin, you got to ask yourself, okay, now is this cover crop going to stay intact and is it going to last all season long providing good weed barrier, or is it going to break down a little bit too quickly, or is it just kind of thin and allowing, and you can see ground underneath that would allow weeds to come up? You got to think, if it's going to be dry and continue on in that droughty conditions, you might be largely okay, even if you're a little bit thin, because you're not going to have weed seeds germinating. But the really bad thing here, though, is if it tends to get a little bit wetter as we go into May, June, July, and we have crop out there, if you get that roller crimped rye and peas out there and it's kind of thin, we get wet, you're going to have a lot of weeds come up, and then there's absolutely nothing you can do except for going through and hand hoeing and hand pulling, because you can't get back in there and do any cultivation. And so that's definitely a super concern, especially if it's really thin. I think out at CAF, we have a bunch of extra straw bales, so I think we will probably leave ours intact, planned into it, and then come back, or leave that cover crop intact, come back and unroll some of our round bales just to give us a bit thicker mat. We know our fields are not the best quality fields where we've got that stuff planted for our mid-scale production. Really, it's just because it's been pretty farmed pretty heavily. So I think having those bales there, adding a little bit of extra organic matter at the end of the season, and using those bales to give us a thick weed cover is probably the route that we will go. But not everybody has that, and bales haven't been super cheap the last couple of years. The other option, though, if you get that cover crop rolled down, crimped down, and starting to look at planting, and it's kind of thin, the other option there is to go ahead and till it in, use that as an organic biomass, use that as a nutrient source, but allow you the ability to come back in and do some seasonal cultivation as needed when we get a weed seed emergence. Not a great option there either, especially if you're looking to do a no-till planting system, but if you're kind of thin on that cover crop, the worst thing that you can do is not deal with it now and have a weedy mess later, or have to come back in and hoe weeds by hand. So, yeah, again, no great answers or options there, but definitely things to be thinking about as you move forward, or as you move forward if you've got a cover crop that you're roller crimping.
All right, now let's bring Riley on the show, or at least past Riley on the show, to hear from her.
I know when we look at using seed that has been left over, a lot of people want to use that seed up first, but I'm kind of leaning towards the side of use your fresh new seed in your high tunnel, because that's your high value real estate. Wait and use that two-year-old seed when you have a field planting, because that field planting is a lower value, higher risk crop. Do you subscribe to that same approach, or are you oldest seed first no matter what?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I like it. I would, if it's direct sown, I would always use the new fresh seed. If it's transplanting, doesn't really matter to me. If I know it's old seed, then I'll probably oversow a little bit and I'll just pick what looks best.
Nice. Yeah, that it came up in class the other day, and it's not something I had really given a whole lot of thought about until, you know, I actually like, wait, what do I actually do? Oh, yeah. Okay.
If you want to know my sneaky strategy, it's actually use all the old seed to make a bunch of transplants for a transplant sale and then keep what doesn't sell that you like.
Uh-huh. Or a cover crop in the fall.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yep.
And that's your pro tip from Riley.
All right, Riley, I want to ask you about cicadas that are coming up, because this is something I'm seeing more and more about in the news. So cicadas, looks like we have two broods, I think is the correct term there, emerging this spring and summer, are you taking any proactive approaches to provide any protection to any of your crops on the farm?
Oh, no. Honestly, I'm not.
Okay, no. And that's okay. Like, I've dealt with them before, and I've not had big issues with them on vegetable crops. So I wouldn't necessarily be thinking about taking preventative action on vegetable crops. But on blueberries and blackberries, I might be thinking about if I had some netting to put some netting over and keep them out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I have not really farmed much with cicadas in my experience, so this is kind of new for me. However, I did notice last year, I don't know if this would be a comparable, I don't know if this is a good comparison, but last year we had quite a few June bugs, which I also had not experienced before. I mean, I came from farming on easy mode in the West, where you just don't have the same bugs. It's just not the same. And those especially went after our blackberries. The problem wasn't so bad on the blueberries, but we reached a certain point in the season because we weren't using any kind of exclusion methods or any kind of trapping. We weren't really using anything to manage those June bugs. That we reached a certain point in the season where it was kind of like, the rest of this crop is yours. Here you go. Unfortunately.
Yeah, we've got a brand new bird netting system set up in place for the blueberries, or it's in progress, which I'm kind of anxious to see, because this also could end up being great timing for cicada management. You know, with cicadas wanting to lay eggs in soft, woody tissue, protection to blueberries and blackberries in this case could be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So we'll see. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be taking action on veggies either, just because that's not what they tend to go for. All right. I do want to say thanks to Riley for hopping on the show last week and for having a couple extra clips to plug in here today. I have just a couple of events I want to highlight that are coming up here. We have on May 3rd and 4th, so this is not too far after this episode gets published, we have a Grow Your Business short course. We will be building beds with hand tools, BCS, tractors. Everybody will have the opportunity to operate and practice with a broad suite of tools at each of those three different scales that we'll be working with. Again, this is a two-day intensive course, building beds, planting beds. We'll be traveling to Middle Fork Farm on Friday afternoon to talk a little bit about their process for building beds on their farm. And then on day two, we'll work on building and developing your brand. So you'll work on developing social media skills, developing your branding image. And then in the afternoon, we'll wrap up the day with more tools and equipment for planting and various other demonstrations of stuff that we have on the farm. And again, hands-on using those tools and not just demonstrations there. So I'll put a link for that short course in our show notes as well. You have pretty quick turnaround on that because that is Friday, Saturday next week. So fingers crossed, no rain those two couple of days, and actually a couple of days beforehand, so we can work out in the field and get prep work done. We also have a field day coming up at Peebles Organic near Augusta. That'll be on May 23rd from 2:30 to 5:30. Sean's a quite a bit bigger farm than what I'm used to working with here in Northwest Arkansas. So Sean is 1,000+ acres, and we'll be out there talking about large-scale fertility management, field prep or seedling prep, and early season cultivation. So we will likely be looking at any combination of sweet potatoes, edamame, soybeans, and corn. I don't have a registration link for this yet as of recording, but I may have one by the time it actually gets posted. So check the show notes and I'll get it added there, if not immediately at posting, shortly thereafter. Well, that's it for today, everybody. Thanks for listening to the April Ramblings. We'll see you next week, or talk to you next week. As always, I'm looking for topics and suggestions and guest hosts. Email me those suggestions or ideas at jhannon@uark.edu. And of course, this podcast was supported in part by the USDA Ag Marketing Service Transition to Organic Partnership Program and the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture. Take care, everybody.